Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game, presented by Green Ventures Landscaping. For homes and businesses that want to stand out, not blend in, visit greenventureslandscaping.com. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning. And we head to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome back one of our favorites to the program, Kyle Tucker, who has now been named Director of Basketball Content for 24/7 Sports. Kyle, good morning, buddy. How we doing?
Good morning, guys. Good to be back.
Good to have you back. So let's talk about this. How did this all come about, and how did we get Kyle Tucker back in the game here in college basketball?
Well, I am apparently a masochist. I don't know. I thought college basketball, college sports are a complete dumpster fire. I think that's where I like to live. So here I am. I'm back. Dumpster diving with Joe.
Dumpster diving. That's a great analogy for covering college sports right now.
I mean, no, it's I had the itch. I mean, truly, it's interesting. Like, on the one hand, college sports, college basketball has never been messier. I mean, this Betty Ocko thing and all the things around it, you know, everything's a lawsuit. Everything is everybody's sort of bemoaning the fact that, like, if you got enough money, then that's all that really matters. And the Wild West of the transfer portal, basically endless free agency for all the different things that are a mess. And I think we'd all acknowledge are a mess. And at some point, we got to get under control. The product itself is awesome. Like, college basketball is awesome right now. We have a historically great freshman class. We got some unbelievably good teams, terrific games. I mean, there have been so many high level fun games so far that the style of college basketball has finally adapted. I mean, you've got, I think, 7 high major teams that have attempted more threes than twos. But the old school still works. Like, you know, you've got Arizona that barely shoots a three. You got Florida that can't make a three, and they both might win the whole thing. And so it's like you've got all these different styles. You've got these incredibly high-level talents. I mean, the NBA, people who love the NBA are paying more attention to college basketball than they are the NBA right now, because everybody in the NBA is tanking trying to get these freshmen that are in this class. So it's really compelling, and I missed it. So here we are.
Yeah, no, it is awesome to have you back, and it was really cool to see the reaction to that this week. So speaking of that, Kyle, this freshman class, which again I think it has a case as the best freshman class since 1981, you know, with Barkley and Ewing and these guys and Jordan, you know. And Chris, I mean, it's ridiculous, but like it has a case, which is kind of, from your perspective, do you look at that as just like a completely random occurrence? I mean, or is there anything to that beyond that? Just because, I mean, like you said, I mean, the draft, which has been, you know, not dominated, but has been heavily, you know, European and international players, it's going to be all freshmen at the top this year.
Yeah, and by the way, Cooper Flagg's supposed to be in this class.
That's right. Good point.
He reclassified. Like, it's insane. I think we talk about this all the time around draft time, like that all you know, number one players, all five-star guys are not created equally. I mean, there's going to be a certain number of five-star kids in every class. There's going to be a top 10 of every class. And some years that top 10, like none of them would even be, the number one guy wouldn't even be in the top 10 in the next year's class. And this is just one of those years that's really up in talent. I think next year is going to be really down in talent. Last year's class was terrific. I think it's just like a cyclical thing. I mean, sometimes you just get a crop that's just like not very good. I don't know if I can like point to anything about why this class is so good, but it is like the most interesting thing about it is we're in the oldest era of college basketball, like ever. Because guys are sticking around and fighting for their like 7th, 8th and 9th years in college basketball. Guys are like collecting NBA pensions and trying to get back into college basketball. This is the oldest era of college basketball, at least since one and done came into play, certainly. But I mean, maybe ever, because just before, the rules were the rules, and you know you were 21 and a senior and you're out. Now it's, you know, there's 23, 24, 25 year old guys in college basketball, and yet in the oldest era of college basketball, the most compelling guys in the sport are all freshmen. Not all, but many of them are freshmen. The real difference makers are freshmen, and like, I wouldn't have thought that. I mean, how many people have said, talked, and written that the transfer portal and NIL, which is keeping good players in college basketball longer, are rendering, you know, high school players obsolete. You know, who's going to go rely on a freshman when you can buy a senior? And largely that is true in the mentality of the coaches out there. I'll be darned if these freshmen aren't like wildly impacting who's going to cut down the nets in March. I mean, even like veteran teams like UConn, you know, they've got a key freshman who, if he's not out there, they're probably not very good.
I mean, Arizona is it's built on its freshmen. They have good veterans, but like those two freshmen they drive the bus.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, you know, BYU's got a chance to make a run, and if they do, it'll be heavily AJ DeBonsa. I mean, Illinois has been terrific all season, and that again, that's not even a freshman anybody had on their radar. You know, I mean, you know, Keaton Wagler is not somebody that was, oh, he's going to be a lottery pick, and now he might be. I think there's now 7 Division I freshmen who've scored 40 in a game, which is just a crazy number. Mykael Brown Jr. at Louisville had dropped 45 the other night and hit 10 threes for Louisville. You know, some of these guys they don't look like freshmen. And then, you know, Cam Boozer absolutely does not look like a freshman. I mean, he is dominating, physically dominating people in a way that, I mean, he looks like a junior or senior out there.
So Kyle, what do you make so far of what we've seen from Rick Barnes' Tennessee squad when they're not, you know, building double digit leads and then blowing them against Kentucky over the last few weeks? They've actually looked pretty good, but you can't take those away. So what do you make of Rick Barnes, this squad, and where they may be headed from here?
They are an absolute mystery to me. And speaking of mystery, it's funny, Kentucky is a team, obviously, your listeners probably know. I know you guys know. I'm deeply familiar with. And one of the real bugaboos for John Calipari by the end at Kentucky is, like, Rick Barnes owned him. Hall of Fame coach Rick John Calipari just – Rick Barnes had his number in a insane way. And now Mark Pope has kind of flipped that script, and he's not exactly, you know, got everybody – he's playing better now. His team is playing better now. But he's not exactly had the Kentucky fan base singing his praises, and yet somehow he keeps doing this to Rick Barnes. That's perplexing to me, especially when it comes with a big lead that all crumbles. Tennessee – I really don't know what to make of them. I think the biggest question mark for me is, as always, I think almost always with Tennessee, is like, can they score enough? and it's fascinating to me that year after year after year after year, Rick Barnes puts out at worst a very good and almost always an elite defensive team that will suffocate you. A team that will rebound, but a team that might not score for minutes, long stretches, and let somebody back in a game like Kentucky. I mean, Kentucky can't score, and somehow they're making these comebacks against Tennessee. I don't know. The ceiling is always, for me with Tennessee, like, do they have consistent scoring? They don't have it this year, and so I don't know. I'd love to know what Joe thinks their ceiling is now.
Yeah, it's the thing. I mean, this is, like you said, they're always – I mean, they're usually top five KenPom defense. This year they're not, you know. They're really good still, but it's such a difference when you take Ziegler out. And as much as I like Jacoby Gillespie, I mean, it's such a huge difference in just the disruption and everything else. I mean, shoot, they are. I'm looking right now. They are 14, so like they're creeping up. But
yeah,
yeah. I mean,
good. Just not elite, not typical.
Yeah, I mean, I do with Ament. I think, I mean, at least they have a guy who, it's not Dalton Kincaid from a couple of years ago, but it is a guy that when all else fails, you can just throw him the ball in the high post and he'll probably, the way he's starting to figure it out, he'll at least get to the line, you know? And I feel like there's still a player maybe short of a real deep run, but I wouldn't necessarily want to play him. Well, let's flip to Vanderbilt. Hell of a story there. I believe you're probably going to go see Vanderbilt here soon. Tyler Tanner was unbelievable the other night at Auburn. I mean, they've had missing Duke Miles, missing Frankie Collins, but the role players shoot the lights out. They beat Auburn. It's a really good team. Do you feel like do they have enough inside? Do you feel like this is a Vanderbilt team that could be, you know, in the second weekend and really threatening to make a push, or is that asking too much?
I think they can be a threat in March because I really believe in their coach. I spent a lot of time with Byington when he was at JMU during that 30-win season right before he came to Vanderbilt. I wrote a big thing about just JMU in general as a sleeping giant, which, you know, think about the fact that they turned out the football coach at Indiana and the basketball coach at Vanderbilt, who've completely transformed both of those programs. You know, and then went and hired Zignetti's replacement, who's now the coach at UCLA 2 years later. I mean, it's really, that is an incredible job identifying coaching talent. But I believe in Byington. I mean, what an impressive, you got Vanderbilt 16-0. I think it was really interesting that they stumble, they lose three in a row. And there's a kind of a test there of, was this all kind of like a mirage? And now they won 4 out of 5 and their one loss is by a single point. To Oklahoma, I guess that's a little bit misleading, but nonetheless, they're legit, and Tyler Tanner is legit. And you know, we do, as I sing Byington's praises, I have to point out what a remarkable gift Jerry Stackhouse left behind in 3-star recruit Tyler Tanner, who is not a 3-star player. He's been really fantastic. I love watching him play. Anytime I like mention Vanderbilt and just like conversations with basketball friends, it's like, man, that point guard is awesome. And he is. I mean, he's just he's really fun to watch. I think they got a great chance to go deep in March. I mean, they might be missing a piece to go really, really deep. But I think they've got the kind of stuff you need to win, you know, to get to that second weekend, and I think that would be huge for Vanderbilt. The game this weekend against Texas A&M is fascinating. Texas A&M now finds itself exactly where Vanderbilt was a month ago. They were rolling. They were in first place in the SEC. Buckyball was working, and they were putting out these SportsCenter-style commercials about pressing people in the parking lot at work. It's like the, super fun. They've now lost 3 in a row, and they've been like some heartbreakers. Last night was one of them. They lost by a point. You know, they led a lot of that game and lost by a point against Missouri. They lost by 3 against on the road against Alabama, having to play against Bediako, who's now ineligible. And you know, what a miserable sort of thing that is if you lost a game to Alabama, a close game to Alabama. That I almost called him a kid. That, you know, arthritic adult, a man who is listening intently to Joe's gout PSAs.
Yes.
I think I would be really, really angry if I'm Bucky McMillan and I lost 100-97 shootout with Alabama, having to play against a guy who was in the NBA. You know, and is now ineligible. So, and that's such a headache for the NCAA tournament selection committee. It's such a, you know, it's such an irritation as you're a team trying to build your tournament resume. All of it is just that part. That's the part when we led this segment talking about the messiness of college basketball. That's the kind of the ugly part of it.
Yep, no doubt about it. Well, Kyle, it's great to have you back. Appreciate so much you taking time to be with us this morning, and we will be talking to you a lot down the road, my friend.
Can't wait. Good to talk to you guys.
Thanks, Kyle.
Absolutely. You as well. Kyle Tucker, our guest on Robbie and Rex Road, director of basketball content for 24/7 Sports. We'll react to what Kyle had to say. Take your thoughts on the Vols, on Vanderbilt. And by the way, huge game between Vanderbilt and Texas on the women's front tonight as well. We'll get into all that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. 102.5 The Game's Big Joe will be at the Gaylord Opryland Convention Center tomorrow from 3 to 5 for the National Wild Turkey Federation Sports Show. Get your tickets now. Check out the latest gear from the hottest outdoor brands, as more than 500 exhibitors will be on site. For more information, visit NWTF.org. Also, make sure tonight you check out Vanderbilt Women's Basketball. 94.9 The Fan, your home for Vanderbilt Women's Basketball. Tonight, the number 5 Commodores taking on the number 4 Texas Longhorns at Memorial Gym at 6:30, pregame beginning at 6:15. And Joe, that should be a pretty darn good game tonight between the Texas women and Vanderbilt women, a top 5 matchup at Memorial Gym.
Yeah, and as we mentioned, not on TV. I know Sherry Ralph was kind of like, well, you know, there's only so much you can do or say about it. It is unfortunate. These are TV decisions made before the season. Like you said, you could pivot. Now let's see. So basically what you would be doing, so the SEC, actual SEC network has Texas A&M Kentucky at 5:30, and then they've got Arkansas Ole Miss. So neither of those games are really that great. But yeah, I mean, it's like, of course, those schools are like, well, you can't, this is something we've put on our schedule for months that we're going to be on, national TV. But as it is, this would be a great opportunity. Like you talk about, like big games and like the Vanderbilt fans and Memorial Magic and all that stuff. I mean, this would seem to be an even more incentive to go to the arena, considering that you have to have SEC Network Plus to watch it on TV. But big time game. It's like you look around the sport and I think, UCLA, South Carolina, and UConn are – I'll be shocked if all three of those teams are not in the Final Four and competing for a national – I think one of them is going to win the national championship. I'd be shocked if one of them doesn't win the national championship. But then again, Texas, they did only lose by 3 at South Carolina. So, that's pretty impressive. They also lost by 5 at LSU. Now, Vanderbilt beat LSU, but Vanderbilt beat LSU at home.
Yeah.
But Texas is they're right there on the cusp of that level of elite team. If Vanderbilt can beat Texas, I don't care where it is, here, there, even at home, that to me would be the best win of the season. I mean, LSU just has not been quite as dominant, quite as consistent. So this would be the biggest win of the season. And, of course, it's a continuation of Michaela Blake's what should be a really strong case for National Player of the Year.
Let's head back to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Nate to the program. Nate, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
What's up, guys? first, Robbie, I can sympathize with you. I have been called the proverbial white boy in the room by my dermatologist, so
yep.
I'm right there with you.
Thank you.
And I've just thought of the name we need to give Joe Rexroad's bracketology.
Okay.
It needs to be Road, R-O-D-E, to the Final Four.
Wow. Mm. I kind of like it.
Okay.
I kind of like it. I'll be honest with you.
And, Joe, with your national bracketology, what would you do if you were a part of the committee with looking at Alabama with that ineligible player? How would you view those games? Or would you just completely throw them out? Thanks, guys. Y'all have a great day.
Thanks, Nate. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a good question. To me, it's just like you're judging Alabama. I know some people are like they should just like knock them down a couple lines, on Selection Sunday. I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, I just think I think they're going to look at them for what they are now. I mean, to me, it's not that different from a team that has a key player. And then you lose that key player, and you need to judge that team for what it is. Let me take it to very different, but let's take it to Florida State football. I mean, I still don't understand all the outrage when Florida State loses its quarterback. We watch Florida State play. It's not anywhere near the same level of team, and they got left out. People get mad about it. Thank goodness they left him out. They got blown out.
Yep.
But so now, is Betty Iacocca that big of a deal? No. I mean, he's definitely their best five. He's certainly their best defensive five, and really offensively too. He's a lob guy that they don't really have. So
impressive at his age.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. The funny thing is, yeah, he's actually within his 5-year window. It's just that he left, and I mean, he may still need my gout help, and I'm happy to provide it if needed. Thank you, Kyle Tucker, for bringing that to light. No, but I think it's like they're going to look at those wins. And, like, it's not like the wins don't count, you know, but you just have to judge the team for what it is. So, to me, like, if Alabama keeps winning from here without him, then it's – I don't see that big of a difference. Obviously, if there's a drop-off, then you could look at those wins, and I guess you could count them a little bit less, you know. Now, the other teams, you know, that's another thing too, right? Okay, so Auburn, well, we would have beat them without – Betty Iacocca, or Texas A&M, like Kyle said, they lose by 3 at Alabama with him playing. So do you give those teams a little more credit? I mean, ultimately, there's so many data points once you get to selection, once you get to that weekend. I mean, all these teams have, you know, 35 games, right, or whatever. So I still feel like the overall resume is just going to be what it is. But, yeah, certainly if Bama struggles here and loses a couple games – then I think the committee will look at that time period and say, let's remember that that may have been a little bit inflated compared to what the team actually is now.
What do we make of a Road to the Final Four as your bracketology name?
I'm pretty sure that, it's not like I named it. It was Bracket Watch before I started doing it, and it'll okay. probably be Bracket Watch after I start doing it, after I stop doing it.
But, oh, you're never gonna stop doing
but I mean, I you know, yeah. I mean, I can make that. I could do make tweet that. You know, Road to the Final Four. Not bad. Not bad.
There we go. One player that we have discussed that the more I hear and the more I read, I wonder if we're not giving enough credit to. We'll get into that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie and Rex Road live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar, or Ian, depending on who you are. Sometimes Ian is referred to as Ian.
Agreeable Ian.
Ian. Ian, what do we make of that name that Kuharski has given you?
Yeah, it's okay. It's not bad. I've had worse, probably.
He struggles to speak, that Paul Kuharski, sometimes.
You know, nicknames, yeah, it's a sign of endearment. So I'll take that as a compliment.
I mean, anybody who says huge instead of huge has issues.
Houston, yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of that going on. I got some tickets to give away to the Nashville Hoop Showdown featuring the Ohio State Buckeyes and the Virginia Cavaliers coming up on Saturday. Caller number two, 615-737-1025. Caller number two will win a pair of tickets to see Ohio State and Virginia coming up at Bridgestone on Saturday. So, Joe, we had Nick Baumgartner on earlier this week, and we had talked to him about Carnell Tate, and he seemed to be pretty high on Carnell Tate and the type of playmaker, number one wide receiver that he could be in the NFL. We like and respect Nick Baumgartner, his opinion on this program. We also like and respect friend of the show, Dane Brugler, on this program. And Brugler came out with his top 100 prospects kind of heading into this draft process here. He's got Carnell Tate at number 10. And here's what he says. He just says, Tate stepped into a full-time role in 2025 and surpassed expectations that were already high. He builds his speed to be a dynamic playmaker downfield while also showing the technical know-how to uncover on to short to intermediate routes. He's an outstanding tracker of the football, consistently owns the catch point regardless of placement. He is going to be a playmaking Z receiver in the NFL. So, Joe, I ask you, you know, we talked about the Titans at number 4 overall. You know, Tate was somebody we talked a lot about during the college football season. And then you look at some edge options that could be available there. You look at the smorgasbord of options on the offensive line that you would have them take at number four. And we've kind of like worn, like the Carnell Tate stuff has kind of worn off a little bit. But I'm telling you, like this week, between Baumgartner and Brugler, two people I respect very much, they seem to really like Carnell Tate. So my question to you, Joe, is are we here on the Robbie and Rex Road program not giving enough credit to Carnell Tate and the prospect that he is heading into this draft?
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. I'm going on watching him play at Ohio State, which I certainly can't say anything bad about it. I think sometimes with Ohio State, and I did this with CJ Stroud, and you know what? Who knows? Maybe in the end it's going to wind all the way back to that. But like with CJ Stroud, it was like, man, the guy never got pressured. The guy had wide open NFL receivers all over the field. How do we know he's that good? Now, that's obviously different here, but with Carnell Tate, as we've talked about, I probably ding him too much for Jeremiah Smith being on the other side of the field. That does not mean Carnell Tate isn't great or won't be great. I hear all that analysis. It's all good analysis. I trust those guys. And I don't doubt that Carnell Tate's going to come in the NFL, and we're going to hear his name on Sundays. He's going to make plays. Is he the number four pick in a draft?
Right.
Good. And is he more the number four pick in the draft than like my preference, despite you telling people that I want them to pick a tackle, David Bailey? to me, that guy is more, that's a number four overall pick level talent than Carnell Tate is. And I mean, in this case, again, we can separate the offensive tackle argument, but in this case, I think the needs are pretty similar. And again, you could say, well, Cam Ward is the most important person in the franchise, and so receiver is actually more important than edge. I would also say if we're going to talk about that, then we should talk about offensive tackle a little more. But bottom line is, I everything that you just read there doesn't really move me off the doubt that he's a top four player in the whole draft.
Well, and by the way, I mean, you know, we're talking about the top 100 prospects. Brugler's got him at 10. So it's not like he's, you know, top five on the prospects list here. Not that necessarily means anything. Like if you're the Titans, your board doesn't have to match Dane Brugler. But I mean, just for reference, his top four here are Arvell Reese, number one, Mendoza, number two, Jeremiah Love at three, Caleb Downs at four. So those are the top four prospects, according to Brugler.
Yeah, and that isn't it wild? I mean, and I'm not – I think there's other people who would be right in that same realm. The running back and the safety, both in the top four of overall prospects. And,
yeah.
I mean, I tell you, that's the thing. It's going to be really interesting to see where both of those guys go because they're not, quote-unquote, premium positions. And right. Yet, I think whoever gets both of those guys, and you know, Love and
Downs,
yeah. Caleb Downs are going to be really happy. Like Caleb Downs could be, you know, think about when you have even like what you know, like think of the Ravens over the years and what safeties have meant to their defense, right? Like when you get a guy like that who is such a Swiss Army knife, can do everything, can be a box safety. Can be a post safety, be all over the field, and just, I mean, that can make such a difference for you. And like someone is probably going to get him lower than that, right, because of the position, and they're going to be real happy about it. I'm not saying the Titans should take him. I'm not saying that. But, again, it's just like, you know, like that, like offensive tackle and safety, like you, running back, like those positions need to be evaluated really closely too. And I'd be very interested to see where some of these teams have these guys on their big boards.
I mean, Brugler says, quote, he is one of the better safeties I have ever evaluated. That's what Brugler said on Caleb Downs, which kind of shows you where he's at.
I think he's going to be great, you know, and it's, I understand. Yes, corner is more important, you know, but man, you look around the league too. And well, here's a team that, like when they lost their safeties, all of a sudden they had issues elsewhere and they're not very great. But when they lost their safeties, they were terrible, which is the Lions. Look at how important those two safeties have been to them in the last few years. You know, I mean, it's, and you look at the Titans and it's like, you know, obviously Hooker has been a very good player for a long time. He got the deal. He's going to be around, but a difference making safety. And of course you hope Porter becomes that and stuff like that, but can really make a big difference. Look at how important Kevin Byard was when this team was excellent on defense.
By the way, your boy Mekhi Lemon, Brugler makes the Amon-Ra St. Brown comparison, says it fits like a glove.
God, I might be good at evaluating players. Maybe I should get rid of the road to March Madness and just start, you know.
Well, in case you're wondering, getting back into your tackle fascination here, they got Spencer Fano at number 8 on the list. So he's technically ranked higher than Carnell Tate is heading into all this.
See, now
to pound.
so that to me, that makes me feel a little better about them not doing it. You know what I mean? Because again, like my whole argument is if it's someone that you're like, oh my God, this guy's just too good. You can't pass up. You know, if the top offensive tackle to him is the 8th best player, that tells me that, yeah, then you're not doing it. You know, you're not doing it unless it's just like, oh, this guy's clearly better than any guys at other position. That's probably not going to be the case. Not that Brugler or any other draft analyst is gospel, but again, remember, Brugler and the good ones, this is their evaluation, but it's also talking to a lot of people. And there are, you know, there's people you can trust in the league to help you kind of form these evaluations.
I mean, I hesitate to do this on February the 12th because we got 2.5 more months of this stuff coming up. But I will tell you, as we sit here today on February the 12th, the name that I'm hoping gets called at number 4 overall for the Tennessee Titans come draft night is David Bailey. Like, that's who I want the Titans to draft. I think he's an absolute stud.
I do too. I just think there's so few questions about him, and I think he's going to be a dominant player. I'm with you. I think that's the guy.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. The Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up next. We got Charles Robinson coming up at 8 o'clock. All that ahead, Robbie and Rexroad, 1025 The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
How about my rant is me slapping you?
If I could change and you could change, we all could change.
I just talked to Lane for 2 hours on the phone.
Now who's responsible for this unwarranted attack on my person?
I was watching on the stream from the Fox Hunt.
Lane, you must hire a defensive coordinator, but call him a coordinator of war.
Now what, I say, what's the big idea bashing me on the noggin with a rolling pin?
We're just out here trying to cover your sports teams.
Would like a world of change.
It is time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You check it out every morning here on the program. A standing ovation for Ian and the foghorn leghorn pulls that he just made in that particular mashup. Good job. Good stop, Ian. Or Ian.
Thank you.
I say.
Yep, yeah. The coordinator of war. That's a fine moment. By the way, because you played Creed, it hurts, but you played Creed, and you know, last week, I don't even know why it was brought up, but someone brought up like Three Doors Down, and it is bizarre, but in all seriousness, I mean, rest in peace, Brad Arnold, who passed away. The lead singer of passed away Saturday. That's sad. And also, like, the whole thing related to our conversation is, I mean, people were tweeting us like, this is really freaky.
Very strange.
Yes.
Timing of all that.
Yes. Now I do actually, I do want to bring this. We are going to, you know, be SEC here with this, because, you know, I actually kind of wish that we got into this with Kyle. We could have talked to Kyle for longer. I should have asked him something about, you know, the Bediako thing. The Bediako thing is obviously a big conversation in the sports world right now. But it's really interesting to me, like, some of the reaction. And I got to say, so, you know, Bruce Pearl is on TV now. And Bruce, he's pretty freaking good, by the way. And it's, you know, I as I mentioned, like last week, I, you know, went down to do a thing with Auburn, and I was inside the program for a couple of days. And the first day I walked into the office, Bruce Pearl was there in his sweatsuit. And I'm like, oh, what are you doing here? And he wasn't there to help coach the team. He was there to because they have printers, so he could print out his stats for his TV job. So
sure.
Yeah, yeah. A very boomer thing to do. You know, Bruce Pearl, you can't help but like Bruce Pearl and enjoy Bruce Pearl. But I must say, I have to read this quote from Bruce Pearl about Nate Oates and about the Charles Bediako thing. A lot of people are mad at Nate Oates, understandably so, okay? But let me read this quote from Bruce Pearl. Quote, Nate said he'd play Bediako 100 times again. What that tells me is Nate doesn't really care about the SEC, and he doesn't care about the NCAA. And it's fine. You're just going to care about your student athletes. That's fine. But you're a member of this conference, and you're a member of the NCAA. What about the rest of the teams? What about the rest of the players? Why should those five teams have to play against an eligible player? I think it was selfish, and I think it was wrong, end quote. I think there's some truth in what Bruce Pearl said there. I think Nate Oates is in the spin zone here big time. And, you know, again, I get his point about European pros, but it is different. It's been an accepted thing for a few years now. They don't have, like, high school basketball. Like, there's different things with the European pros and the NBA stuff and people trying to come back from the NBA. But there's some points there made by Bruce Pearl. But Bruce Pearl can't be the one to make these points. No, my God! People to try to make these points about not caring about the NCAA and the SEC please. Dude, the FBI, like, totally, like, investigated you for years. Like, you got put on a show cause from Tennessee. Again, I like Bruce Pearl. Bruce Pearl is one of the great personalities in the sport. Basketball Hall of Famer, great coach. You could not be the one to give moral judgments about anybody in the NCAA and the SEC. Please, please don't do it. Your basketball analysis is great. Stick with that. I understand when issues come up, you know, people are going to ask you about it. But, like, dude, this is like an all-time hypocritical comment from a college basketball coach.
Well, and also, like, I understand, and I'm one of the people who are upset about the Bediako thing in terms of, like, can we at some point use common sense and all this crap that's going on around here and not let NBA players back into college basketball? And I'm glad to see the ruling go the way that it did. But for me to sit here and act like, or for anyone to sit here and act like any of these coaches anywhere have their conference or the NCAA's interest in mind over their own teams is just hilarious. I mean, that maybe Rick Barnes, maybe, and I don't even think that's the case, but maybe. But that's about it. Reverend Rick might be the only one.
Yeah, like there's coaches who would not do this, okay? Like there are coaches, and I do, like, I mean, I think it's worth calling out, okay, there are some coaches that actually care enough to be like, the greater good is more important to a point. But, like, everybody here, it's different levels of pressure, right? Like, some coaches are fighting for their jobs. A lot of them are. Nate Oates is a guy who is not. He has a really good program. But also, he just has a team this year that it's not winning it. It was not going to win it given the state of the interior. And this made a huge difference. A huge difference, you know? And so, yep. I mean, I think Bama – I don't know that Bama was a title contender with Bediako, but they were closer, and they definitely had a more well-rounded look with them. Yeah, but, like, yeah, the criticism of you don't care about – I love the NCAA especially. You don't care about the NCAA. I mean, my God, are you kidding me? First of all, mostly what we do is rip the NCAA, and mostly they deserve it, right?
That's true.
But – yeah, to turn this into, like, some you don't care about the sport big picture. Again, if we had coaches who did, then these things wouldn't matter because they wouldn't even go there, right? They wouldn't even go to these pushing the boundaries and trying to improve their rosters with guys that probably shouldn't be in college basketball. So, again, Bruce, great analysis, good stuff on TV. Some of his tweets are, you know, little, you know, maybe tweet a little less. But, yeah, the holier-than-thou criticisms on the greater good, I mean, that you're definitely a little bit out of character there. Probably not the guy to be doing that.
So he's, like, doing games on TV?
Yeah, he did the Michigan, Ohio. So mostly he's been doing like the TNT studio with like Jalen Rose, Jamal Mashburn, and those guys. He's good. I mean, I'm not surprised that he would be good on TV. But he did the Michigan Ohio State game with I forget who was doing play by play, but Bill Raftery, who should do every game, by the way, because he's the greatest. But it was Bill Raftery and Bruce Pearl. I gotta say, man, it was really good. Like, it was good analysis, but also funny. And he and Raftery are funny. And yeah, I think we're gonna see more and more of this moving forward, which is great. Just, you know, just let's remember, like, you know, all the stuff that's happened before here, and probably some, you know, some things you probably should just not even get into.
Smash!
And he cooked.
There you go.
God, I forgot about that one. That was all-timer.
Oh, man.
Any cookouts? Any cookouts that have gone on?
I would think so. I mean, I would hope. I mean, shoot, you can have Aaron Kraft over and smoke a whole hog at this point. Go for it, man.
It is objectively hilarious to think back on that. And
yeah.
I understand the lying was a big part of it.
Yes.
But where we are now and what we were talking about then is objectively hilarious.
Yes, a recruit was over at a barbecue. Oh, my God.
Yeah, oh, boy.
Oh,
sound the alarm.
The horror.
Joke!
Well, Charles Robinson with us coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.